Cooper's coming in, gold and a world record. Ian Thorpe,
the birth of a legend.
458 is the total, out of which Bradman has made 309 not out. It's a world's record.
Freeman has 2-1, the crowd roaring. Freeman wins gold. Cathy's the winner. Australia the winner.
First ball in Test cricket in England for Shane Warne. And he's done it. He started off with the most beautiful delivery.
To This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Sam Edmund.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. As always, we're here for our friends at Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Well, today, we're speaking to a man whose heart well and truly beats true for the red and the blue. As a player, Harold Hassett Mann won 3 premierships, 3 best and fairest, and has a place in both Melbourne's Team of the Century and the AFL Hall of Fame. He was a key figure in the Demons' golden era that stretched from the mid-50s to the mid-60s. As an administrator, he served as CEO from 1992 to 97, a period that saw the club go perilously close to merging with Hawthorn. On the field and off, Hassett Mann has lived through the good times, but also very much experienced the bad times at the club he loves, and we're so glad to have him on the show. Hassa, hello and welcome.
Good day there, Sam.
As I mentioned off the top, your journey is a fascinating one. Let's rewind all the way back. Where did it first start, Hassa?
Well, I was born in a little country town called Moorabbin, about 300 or 560 odd k's from Melbourne. Moorabbin being near Mildura. So my first entry into the football world was through the Sunraysia League.
Now, it was your cousin, and as it turned out, future Melbourne footballer Len Mann, who dubbed you Hassa. But how? What are the origins of the nickname that became your name?
Look, I'm not quite sure, Sam. I put it down to Len. We grew up as brothers in the country, and how it came about, I don't really know.
So the little town of Moorabbin, obviously outside Mildura, you played 6 seniors at what age, Hassa?
I played my first senior game at age 16, and it was after my first senior game that in the evening at 6:30 approx, there was a knock on the door, and Jim Cargill, secretary of the Melbourne Footy Club, was up there to recruit another member of the Moorabbin side. And we found that Jim made his way to my parents' place on the Saturday evening after my first game.
Now, that was Melbourne, but they had competition, didn't they? How many clubs were chasing you for your signature?
Well, at that stage, not really, Sam, because, as I say, I was only a 16-year-old kid, and I probably hadn't had any reputation at that stage, and it just so happened that Jim was there, as I say, to recruit another member of the team, which obviously didn't happen.
No, but your commitment to Melbourne didn't come for some time after that, am I right in saying?
Well, in those days, you signed a Form 4, which tied you to the club for a period of 2 years, and I was reluctant to sign with Jim on that first evening because at that stage I was an avid Essendon supporter, and I wasn't overly keen, knew nothing much about the Melbourne Footy Club at that point.
So as time went on then, and perhaps some other clubs became interested, were your beloved Essendon one of those?
No, they weren't, and unfortunately, I guess at the time, but as it turned out, I guess the decision I made to sign with Melbourne turned out to be quite a good one.
It did indeed. We'll get to that in a moment. But what actually got you over the line? Wasn't it a pair of specially made boots for your sort of wider feet there, Hassa, that might have won the race for your services?
Well, in those days, money didn't play a part, and I signed with Melbourne for a pair of footy boots, which incidentally, I never ever wore. I think they were someone else's boots, to be honest. And,
well, it's
Jim
good.
Jim thought he was doing well.
It's good business from Melbourne then, isn't it? So I mentioned the timing, and this is where great fortune obviously comes into it. You arrive at Melbourne at a glorious time in 1959. Now, the D's had won premierships in 55, 56, 57. They were beaten by the Pies in 58. But I wanted to ask you, in those first couple of years at Melbourne, what was it like around the city, around town, in this era to be known as a Melbourne player?
Well, before I went to Melbourne, I think it's important to note that I was transferred in my employment down to Rutherglen.
Yep.
In the Ovens at Murray. And I played a season or three quarters of a season with Rutherglen. And there's no doubt in my mind that the season that I had in the Avonton Murray at the time was regarded as the best league outside of the city. I gained some enormous experience in that all the coaches of the eight teams in the Avonton Murray were in fact ex-league players. I mean, my coach at Rutherglen was Ray Vaught, who played with Collingwood. Bob Rose was coaching Wangaratta Rovers. Bill Stevens was coaching Yarrawonga from Fitzroy. Des Healy, Collingwood, was coaching Wodonga. Len Fitzgerald from ex-Collingwood was coaching Glenalla. Jimmy Dean, ex-Richmond, was coaching Myrtleford. So the league itself was a very strong league, and I guess that playing against men basically for the first time in that competition certainly gave me a little experience and a stepping stone from the small St. Raisy League into the big league.
Well, it certainly prepared you well, because in your debut year you win best first year player and you win a flag at 18 to cap it all off. In fact, you kick the sealer, don't you, to win it against Essendon, of course, the side that you're obviously telling us that you bagged for growing up in 1959. I mean, this was a big first year and the stuff of dreams in many ways, Hasser.
It was an interesting one, Sam, in that I never nearly didn't play in the grand final, because in the, I think it was about July, August, I got called up to do my national service. And the intake was to take place in September.
Right.
Which created a bit of a hassle, and the Melbourne Footy Club decided to take the army to court. And we went to court, and Jimmy Cardwell had a legal representative, obviously. And when he put the case forward that here was a chance for a young 18-year-old kid to play in the grand final, experience something that very few people have the opportunity to do so. And I thought after our representative's submission, there's no way in the world I was going to miss playing in the grand final. And then the army came along, and after their submission, there was no way that I was going to play, as they argued that I shouldn't be seen as the exception and given any opportunity to bypass, when our argument was not to bypass doing the actual national service, but in fact seek a deferment. Luckily enough, the judge ruled in our favour, which made me able to play in the final series.
Jeez, they would have been anxious times for you. And when did you end up doing your national service, Hasser?
Well, as it turned out, I was deferred to, I think it was March the following year, and then the national service was abolished.
Yeah.
So I never, in fact, did the national service.
Right.
And I got to play in the grand final.
Well, you fulfilled your service of a different kind, because Melbourne were happy to have you on the day. As I say, you played a big part in that and throughout your debut season in 1959. For those that don't remember you as a player, Hasser, or weren't fortunate enough to watch you run around in the red and the blue, just describe yourself. What would you say your strengths were as a player?
I was probably had some skill, I guess. I had a little bit of pace, I guess, and I thought I was quite a good team player. In actual fact, Sam, I thought that what I achieved in football probably exceeded the ability that I had.
I think you're far too modest there, and the record would suggest otherwise, but you're more than welcome to uphold the modesty card here. There's no problem with that, Hasser, and many people will remember you as a player and the influence you had over a long period of time. Let's move on.
Sam, I was very lucky to come into the Melbourne side. I mean, the actual team, I think there was only Tassie Johnson and myself were the only two players in that 59 team that hadn't played in, you know, premierships prior. And we had a number of our players, the Brassies, Dixons, Adams and so forth, had all played in at least three for that time. So as a young, inexperienced kid, we were very fortunate to be fitted in.
And just I asked this earlier, Hasser, can you remember, can you take us into the city at this point in time? What was it like for a side that was so wildly successful, winning premierships basically year upon year, what it was like as an 18-year-old in the city of Melbourne to be known as a Demons player at that time?
Well, I guess you don't think about it very much as a young 18-year-old kid. You're just thrilled to be able to, you know, to get a game. You know, I probably thought in my first year, well, you'd probably spend the time in the reserves. I remember the first, or the last practice game, Sam, was an interesting one in that Jimmy Cargill came up to me just before the last, on the Thursday night before the last practice game, and said to me and told me that I was a bit of an embarrassment to him in that he had sort of promoted me as a top recruit and my form hadn't been exceptionally good. Mm. And he told me that I was going to be tested out in that first game by Jeff Case, an a Victorian player. And lucky enough, I kicked, I think, 4 or 5 goals from the last practice game, which earned me a spot in the team as a 19th man for the first game of the season. I then played 2 in the reserves, I think it was, and never played reserves again in my career.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Now, while he couldn't have timed his arrival much better, Hassamand also found himself at the centre of the most seismic chapters in Melbourne Football Club history. That's next.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, great to have your company on This Is Your Sporting Life, made possible by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. We're with Melbourne icon Hassa Mann. Hassa, I know you've spoken a bit about how fortunate you were to land at Melbourne at the time that you did. You also arrived at a club where the legendary Norm Smith is the coach. We could probably speak about this for hours, but what impression did Norm make on you?
Look, to be honest, Sam, I think anything that I achieved in my sporting career, in my football career, I owe to Norm. I mean, he was just a person that I idolised as a person. His principles was very, very strong and thrown at us. And he was the sole reason, I think, that I achieved what I did achieve in my football career.
He would obviously wind up a 6-time premiership coach. The resume is incredible, but he was also a stickler for discipline, wasn't he, Hassa? And he had nicknames like the Demon Dictator and the like, but he was straight down the line, wasn't he?
He was. One thing I recall about Norm is he had a very good memory for the things you did wrong. if he was to tap you on the shoulder and told you and tell you that you'd played a good game, you would go home at night and rest easy.
But his influence went beyond football, though, didn't it? And it went into life. I mean, you're a young man at this stage, and there were many like you at the club. Tell us about how he shaped, you know, your life, I guess, when you're at an age where, obviously, you're easily influenced and people go in all sorts of different directions. The influence he had on you as a teenager.
He had very strong principles and stood by those principles. The principles of loyalty, the principle of honesty, were two that he kept pushing very hard. And the thing that I also admired about him, that he treated everyone as an equal. And the Barassis and the stars of the Melbourne team, they copped their criticism when due as much as all of us. And it was Norm's, I guess, attitude and that we were all prepared to probably run through a brick wall, knock ourselves out, and get up again for the man.
Mm. That is a well-worn saying, being willing to run through a brick wall for the coach, but you're saying you'd get knocked out and you'd get up and run through it again.
Well, that's what you do for Norm, because we all just admired him so much. And I say he was very strong all the time on the strong principles of life.
We discussed your 3 premierships earlier, Hassa. After the 1964 season, you're basking in the glow of your 3rd flag. You're 24, young in every sense. You're a vice captain. You're a 2-time best and fairest winner at this stage. And life, I imagine, couldn't be much better. But then the great Ron Barassi, the captain, drops the bomb that he's off to Carlton. Now, can you go back, and I know it's a long time, but take us inside, give us an insight into the level of shock felt by you and your teammates at this time when this was announced?
Well, initially it was just unbelievable that a guy such as Barassi, who had the standing as a player and as a person, and was red and blue through and through. His father played for the club. For him to, out of the blue, as it turned out, announce that he was defecting to Carlton. And as a player, it was just hard to understand how Barassi could do that, because Barassi was red and blue through and through, and it was just unbelievable, and it just hit. The shock of it just was you couldn't explain it, really.
So you obviously had no inkling at all beforehand, Hasse?
We had nothing, no inkling at all, and as it turned out, and we found out later, Norm Smith was even prepared to stand aside to let Ron coach Melbourne.
Mm.
He knew that he had strong coaching aspirations, and Norm, at that stage, who had the record of having Melbourne in the finals in 10 successive years for 6 premierships, he was prepared to stand aside for Barassi. The Barassi, as he is, very strong-willed person, felt that it was best for him, if he was going to pursue a coaching career, not to coach the Melbourne side at that stage.
Did Ron address the players at all before he departed?
No. No, the first we found out was reading it in or hearing over the news and reading it in the papers.
I was going to ask you if you could remember the exact moment that you heard the news and how.
I think I was probably in the car driving somewhere, and boy, what a shock.
A lot of people listening today obviously weren't around at this time. Can you give us a sense of just how big a story and moment this was in the history of the game, Hasse? Can you put it into words, do you think?
I don't know that I can, Sam, other than, no, I can't really. It was just unbelievable. I mean, a good mate, a fine leader of the club, to come out of the blue so unexpectedly was just... to say, unbelievable.
Were you and he close during your playing days at this time?
I think we were all close, and that was probably part of the success of the Melbourne football team, is that we were a very close-knit bunch and a close-knit family. And this was one of the principles also of Norm Smith, that it was important that the females of the club were also a team with the players off. And so we were, in a true sense, a real family club.
And the mood of the players, Hasse, I mean, obviously initially shock, as you say. Did shock turn to anger?
No, I don't think so. I think we all felt disappointed with Ron because he decided to leave the club. But also we know the type of person Barassi is, that he's a very success-oriented person, and we knew that if he had made that decision, it would not have been made lightly, and that once it was made, that he would go on and pursue a very successful career in his own right.
So as time did go on in the immediate aftermath, did his motivation for leaving Melbourne for Carlton become understandable almost, or never?
It was always hard to understand why he would want to leave Melbourne.
Mm.
And I think that would be the same for all players. Why did he want to leave Melbourne?
Did you ever speak to him after he left? I'm sure you caught up many a time, but was this something that you ever discussed with him?
Not really. No, not really. We knew that once Barass makes up his mind to do something, he would give it 100%, and that decision would not have been made lightly. Particularly, it would have been very hard for him, Sam, to leave the Melbourne Football Club, particularly because of his background and his family background.
And we were speaking about relationships. He was obviously very close with Norm, didn't he? He lived in Norm's house for a period of time, didn't he, as a youngster?
He did that, and that made it even more surprising that he would want to leave.
You're with This Is Your Sporting Life, brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Just jump online to visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Well, if the departure of Barassi came as a shock to Hasseman and his Melbourne teammates, it's arguable it was nothing compared to what was to come next.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Enjoying this week's edition of This Is Your Sporting Life. We're chatting with Melbourne Team of the Century member Hasse Mann. Hasse, despite the upheaval Barassi's departure to Carlton may have caused initially, you made a strong start to the 1965 campaign, didn't you?
We did, Sam. We got away to a very good start, winning the first eight games and obviously sitting on top of the ladder and looking strong and looking forward to another successful season. But then, that was not to happen, was it?
No, it was not. That's an understatement. You lost three of your next four games, but then things really exploded before the Round 13 game against North Melbourne that was to take place at Coburg. Now, the night before that game, you were spending some time over the phone. Again, nothing unusual with Norm Smith that night on match eve to discuss some specifics around the game the next day with the Kangaroos?
No, it's the usual occurrence. Norm would give me a call on the Friday evening and discuss the tactics of the game and discuss what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. And we had that conversation, which lasted for about 10 or 15 minutes, I guess. And then I heard through the phone the doorbell ring. And Norm then said, look, we've covered our discussion for tonight. There's something at the door. I'll leave it there. We'll see you tomorrow. So we hung up and I went to have a glass of milk, and about 2 minutes later, the phone rang again. And there's this person on the phone, quite agitated and upset. And he said, it's Norm here. And I said, I've just spoken to Norm Smith, you know, who is it? He said, no, Hasse, it's Norm. And he said, I've just been sacked. And I said, I recall saying, I thought it was some crank. And I said, you know, get off the phone, you silly bee. Anyway, Norm then convinced me that it was him, and he was crying. And I just couldn't understand that he'd been sacked. Here we had played, we'd won eight of our first 10 games, sitting on top of the ladder, doing nicely, and they sacked him. Unbelievable. So as it turned out, Sam, we had a quick conversation, we hung up, and then my wife and I decided to drive to Coburg to Norm's house because... he obviously was very upset. We were met at the door by Norm, crying, his wife Marge crying, his brother Len and his wife crying. So I guess Glennis and I join in. it was just a unbelievable moment that I will never ever forget.
So the noise you heard with the doorbell ringing was actually a courier, wasn't it, delivering a termination notice?
It was a courier delivering a telegram. And that in itself,
yeah,
from the club's perspective, how could big business people deliver a bombshell like that, not having the guts to do it face-to-face? It was just... could not be explained. I could not explain.
And can you explain now? Surely politics are at play here, given the win-loss. So did you have any grasp at the time or in the years after what was taking place behind the scenes that might have led to this, Hasse?
We knew that there was some tension between Norm and the club, in that Norm, some weeks earlier, had a statement against an umpire. And that got a fair bit of tension with that. And we found out later that the football club, it went to court, and the football club, in their wisdom, question mark, decided not to support Norm. So that, I think, was the catalyst that started the club having some doubts about Norm. It was also, I think, that Norm was pushing very hard, the club very hard at the time, because he felt that that we're getting near the end of an era where, I guess, the last three or four players of the boom recruits of 53-54 that took Melbourne through to that magnificent run was ending. And Norm felt that the club had to change its strategy and its attitude and had to start basically looking at paying for players, which other clubs were doing at the time. And Norm was adamant at the time that we had to, if we were going to continue to be successful, we had to match what the other clubs were doing. And the club, of course, was reluctant to do that. You've got to imagine also, Sam, that at the time that the Melbourne Football Club was a section of the MCC. Mm. Basically, the MCC bankrolled the Melbourne Football Club. And with their other activities and their other responsibilities with the other sections of the club, I guess had to be careful on how they treated the Melbourne Football Club with respect to the other sections of the club. But that also, I think, Norm was quite right in his approach, because we did have to. Melbourne did not have any contract players per se. And at that stage, I think Barassi, as captain of the club, was getting probably £2 a week more than the recruit playing his first game. And other clubs at that stage were certainly paying players and recruiting players and enticing players to come to the club because of that payment scheme.
So everyone's in tears at Norm's house on the Friday night. Now, you did have to front up and play the next day, didn't you, at Coburg against the Kangaroos. I mean, how difficult was that?
Very difficult. I recall, I think I got home from Norm's place on the Saturday morning at about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And early the next day, I phoned all the players and told them the situation that we were confronted with. Checker Hughes, was as chairman selector, was going to coach the team at North Melbourne. And it was an atrocious day at Coburg. I think the first and only time we played at Coburg, we lost the game. And an interesting point that after the game, as captain, I was confronted by the president, Don Duffy, who made it very clear that I was not to appear on television the next day. I was not to be seen as supporting Barassi. And if I did, it would jeopardise my captaincy. So I looked Don Duffy in the eyes and said, "Don, I will be appearing tomorrow. I will be supporting Norm Smith. And if I lose my captaincy over that, so be it." So I made it very clear that I, as all other players, were very supportive of Norm. Mm. That was only the start of then the next interesting 5 or 6 days, when a group of business people and legal people decided to challenge the Melbourne Football Club to get Norm Smith back as coach. And it was Trevor Rapke, a very senior Victorian judge, who led the Get Smith Back to Melbourne campaign, which, as it turned out, was successful. And 4 or 5 days later, Norm was reinstated as coach of Melbourne.
And that's just crazy, isn't it? But the damage was done, wasn't it? I mean, you won only one more game for the year. You missed the finals for the first time in 11 years as a result. And so in a matter of a few, dramatic months, Hasser, Melbourne's dominance had just been dismantled. I mean, you wouldn't make the finals again until, 1987? And as of 2021, right now, you haven't won a premiership since Smith's dismissal. It was a cataclysmic period of time, wasn't it?
Well, it was, and it that period, particularly for the rest of the season, it was a terrible situation to be in, as you could sort of feel the tension between the playing group, the coaching group, and the committee. And people were sort of standing in corners in groups and so forth, and you could just, as a player, you could feel the tension between coach, players, and club. And it was something that I think that, not I think, I know, it affected and had a gigantic effect on the club for decades after that.
We're talking to Hasse Mann on This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Next, the abandoned merger with Hawthorn.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Company here on This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Former Melbourne great Hasse Mann is our guest today. Hasse, in 1967, you win your third Melbourne Best and Fairest, and I think that year you're often spoken of as a Brownlow contender as well, despite a bit of a knee problem. But at the end of 1968, the Demons refused to give you a two-year contract. Is that correct?
That's correct, Sam. I played with the stateside in 1968. In Perth, and it was after that game that I was approached by both South Fremantle and East Fremantle to take up a coaching position with their clubs. Now, coaching was the furthest thing from my mind, but at the time I was not interested, as I say. I thought that, well, here would be a good chance to take my wife to Perth and have a chat to the two clubs, but with no intention at all to pursue that line. I came back and made Melbourne aware that I'd been approached by the two clubs. I spoke to Cardwell and told him that I was a Melbourne player through and through. I wanted to play 200 games with the club and more, and that I had no interest with these offers. Jim then said that I should talk to the chairman of selectors, being Colin McLean. And I did that. And it was in that conversation that I was told, as a 28-year-old, that he did not think that I had two more years of VFL football left, and that he couldn't and would not support giving me a two-year contract with the club. So I guess I thanked Colin there and then, and decided to pursue the coaching roles, and I decided to go and play with South Fremantle.
But they refused to clear you initially, didn't they, the Demons?
Well, it was annoying, I guess, Sam, because in the last 7 years of my service with Melbourne, you know, I'd won three best and fairest, runners-up twice and runners-up three times. So I'd featured in the top three in the last 7 years, and yet here I was told that I didn't have 2 years left, which was a little hard to take, I can assure you. And I guess in pursuing the coaching role, it gave me some happy feeling to think that the following year, as coach of South Fremantle, I was picked to play for WA against Victoria. So I made it clear to Colin McLean when I was twin that I still had a little bit left.
Well said, you had the last laugh. But I just wonder, because of all those things, did it sort of end on, after all the good times, something, a bad terms with the Ds?
Not from my perspective, no. I mean, I had a fine career with Melbourne, and I loved every moment of it. I was disappointed. I was terribly disappointed that I wasn't still playing with them, but I could never leave on bad terms.
But the other part of it was, your captain coached South Fremantle to a flag in 1970, so you mentioned state selection, but that must have been a sweet one as well.
Well, it was after the first year. The first year was a disaster. We won five matches, finished stone bottomless last.
Yep.
And then I thought, well, something, we had to do something drastic in my second year. And it was then that I went to the club and told them that I wanted to be sole selector because I wasn't happy with the selectors that I'd had in my first year. As is the case, those two guys that were co-selectors had been in that position for a number of years prior, and they had sets against players, and I wasn't able to get what I thought was my best team on the ground at all times. So reluctantly, they gave me that role, and we went from last to premiership, which was a nice return.
Indeed it was. So we skip forward a bit here. You joined the Melbourne board as a director in 1991, and you served as chief executive from 92 to 97. Now, Hasa, in keeping with your career, there wasn't a dull moment here either. What what do you remember of the events of 1996 and what a whirlwind it was when the Melbourne Hawks appeared set to be formed?
Well, you go back probably 18 months or 2 years, and again, we were very conscious that things were changing pretty drastically in terms of AFL football. I think 92, 93, I think player managers came on the scene, and in my opinion, that was the start of a real change in AFL football, in that money became a big issue. Salary caps were introduced, and salary caps were increasing. And we were looking at the 5 years hence, and it was our belief that the salary cap was going to explode. And we felt that the club was in a position whereby we were behind the eight ball, because of the attitude, still the attitude of the Melbourne Football Club to be totally professional. And we put up a plan that we felt that financially the club was in a very good state. Player-wise, we were not strong. And we looked at options. When I say we looked at options, the board looked at options, and it was decided we should do a study to see where the football club was positioned and where we should be positioned to go forward. It was in that we had a meeting up at up country, and it was decided there again that an option would be to pursue the option of maybe marrying together with another club that could provide probably an instant addition of players into the club. And I guess, we looked at the various clubs, and it was decided that probably if we were going to pursue that, that Hawthorne perhaps offered the best option. And I guess that was the start of it. That was a very hard, terribly hard decision to make. I know that Ian Ridley suffered. As president, he found it most difficult to even think of the idea of the Melbourne Football Club changing and marrying together with another club. But as it turned out, after a lot of study and looking at the options, that it was decided that we should go ahead with it.
But then Don Scott at Hawthorne, and there was the emergence of a Melbourne supporter by the name of Joe Gutnick, didn't it? Saw the anti-merger brigade just relatively quickly, I think, gain strength and voice. And it is easy in hindsight, but Hasser, as CEO at the time and someone closer to the specifics than so many, was there regret that it didn't happen in the immediate aftermath? Did you and others think it should have happened at the time?
Well, I think all the studies we did, even though we found it hard to reach the decision that we did to pursue a merge. At that stage, Sam, also, I think, the league were making it very, very clear that if clubs were prepared to marry together, that they would certainly financially support it, as their idea was to try and reduce the number of clubs in Victoria, and this was one way of achieving that. And so therefore, we probably had the support of the AFL Commission to pursue, and as it turned out, whilst we as a board, and particularly Ridley, myself as Melbourne players, and McMahon as Melbourne players, the last thing we wanted was to lose the identity of the Melbourne Football Club.
Mm.
But we were confident that we had done the work, and we were confident of probably succeeding. But we could understand the reaction of the Melbourne supporters and probably the AFL public in general, that it was something that was going to be hard to achieve. And credit to Don Scott. Don rallied the ranks of Hawthorn, and it didn't go ahead. Personally, I felt that reluctantly I didn't want it to happen, but I thought it should happen.
Hassa, we're speaking four rounds into the 2021 season. Melbourne have just made their best start to a campaign since 1994. They're 4-0, one of only three undefeated teams in the competition. Early days, but what have you made of it all?
Look, they're looking pretty good at the moment. I think they've obviously changed their team plan and strategies. They've introduced a lot of pace into the side. They've introduced some good, talented youth in the side, and I think that combined with, I guess, the experience of a lot of players that have now got some games under their belt, that we're probably positioned to make a run at the finals. Hopefully, I mean, we've made a very good start, and certainly the confidence should be fairly high at the moment. Four out of four is a great start, but you've got to continue that over the next three or four games will be very important. I think, you know, the missing or having May out of the side for the next two or three or four weeks will be a test of the depth and strength of our list.
I suppose, not to finish on a sour note, but the fact that you can still lay claim to being a member of the club's last premiership side, and we know they're mightily hard to win in 1964, I'd imagine that's a source of sadness for you and some of your teammates, however.
What do you mean by sadness?
Well, the fact that it's been that long since you've won another one, the fact you can still say you're a member of the most recent premiership side.
It's really a bit embarrassing, Sam.
Yeah,
isn't
right.
It? To think that the club has gone so long without having success. And I feel for the players. I mean, I really feel for the players who put the effort in and have not had the success that we experienced, and particularly from my own perspective, because I walked into a premiership side and played in, three in the first 5 or 6 years of my career, and something that players are lucky enough to achieve one.
Hassa, man, it's been great to catch up today. I mean, you have had an incredible journey in football, and as we've touched on, you've been there for, well, probably three of the biggest moments in Melbourne Football Club history. But amongst it all, you had a wildly successful career, franked in more recent years, of course, by Team of the Century and AFL Hall of Fame selections. Well done on all you achieved, and thanks a lot for joining us.
Good, Sam. Thanks.
And thank you for joining us also. You've been listening to This Is Your Sporting Life. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Jump online to find tobinbrothers.com.au, and we'll catch you the next time we celebrate the life of another sporting icon.